Okay, hello everybody. We're back for another week of answering your shilas, and this is the pre-Pesach edition. I assume we're going to take a week off next week for Pesach, but very nice shilas came in this week. And again, everything we do is l'zchus refuah shleima for Joko. He should have refuah shleima bikarov. So let's go through one by one. Question number one: why is Parshas Tzav typically read before Pesach? Is there a thematic or a halachic connection between the two? So first of all, I don't think there has to be a connection between the two. Meaning, I don't think this is one of those things that's a halacha. Meaning, there are certain parshios of the that the Gemara talks about that you read the Tochacha prior to Rosh Hashanah, Tichlashana v'Kilvoseha. I don't think there's any din the Parshas Tzav. Meaning, in the days and the communities where they used to only finish the entirety of Torah once every few years and not every single year, I don't think they had Parshas Tzav before Pesach, and sometimes Parshas Tzav is not Shabbos HaGadol. But having said that, obviously, since it so often works out that it's right before Pesach, there is a lot of there are connections that are that people try to make, and the connections actually aren't so bad. The pasuk says, for example, in Parshas Tzav, that Kli Cheres Asher Tevush Al Bo Yishav. There, b'mayim. So it describes hagolas kalim, that if you have a kli that you cannot absorb, you cannot extract the flavor from, like kli cheres, where the flavors that are absorbed in it are absorbed in it forever, so you can't kasher it. It's tishaver. But if you have a metal kli where there's a way to kasher it, there's a way to get the flavor out of it, so then that's what you're supposed to do. And obviously the dinim of Hagalas Kalim of Kashrin Kalim are very, very relevant to Pesach. So much so that even though those dinim are all Yeridaya related dinim, like you would think all the dinim of Kashrin Kalim should only be in Yeridaya. And there is a small simon in Yeridaya about Kashrin Kalim, but the larger simon in Shulchan Aruch is in Hilchos Pesach, because that's when it always comes up. That's when people typically are actually Kashrin Kalim. In addition to that, we read in Parshas Tzav about the Korban Todah. It's not such a stretch to say that the Korban Todah and the Korban Pesach are very much related to each other. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos Daf Nun Dalid that Arba Tzrichim Lahodos, that there are four situations that a person has to bring in Korban Todah. If he goes over an ocean or through a desert, or he was very ill and he got better, or he was in jail and he got out of jail. And the Maharal in the drasha that he gives for Shabbos HaGadol says that if you look carefully, Klal Yisrael went through all of these things, all of these four situations, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu did nisim for us, that we were able to be saved from all of these different situations, that we went Derech HaMidbar Yamsuf, because we were in Mitzrayim, the Kodesh Baruch Hu took us out of a Beis HaAsurim, of a jail, we were mishubed to Paru Mitzrayim, and we were also sick because Hashem saved us. Not that we were actually sick, but Hashem saved us from significant illness because the makos that Mitzrayim suffered, that we were saved from, certainly involved some level of illness, and therefore it's like a cholish and a srape. So all four of those things are things that Klal Yisrael went through. So maybe in a certain sense, the Korban Pesach is like a Korban Todah. In fact, there's some Sofer in his drashos to Shabbos HaGadol, he quotes in Abarbanel where he says beferish this way, that he says that that's what it means in the Manishtana when we say Shabbos HaLelos Anu Achlim Chametu Matzah. A friend of mine pointed this out to me. I don't think I knew this Abarbanel, that when we say that HaLelos Anu Achlim Chametu Matzah Halayla Zekula Matzah, we're saying, wait a second, this is so obviously a Korban Todah, but a Korban Todah typically has both Chametz and Matzah, and this Korban Todah only has matzah associated with it. Meaning, Korban Todah comes with 40 loaves of bread, and most Menachos are not chametz, but Korban Todah comes with chametz loaves as well, and that's in fact what we're asking in the Manishtana. So it's an amazing thing. Korban Pesach and Korban Todah are very much related, and we read about the Korban Todah even though we don't read about the Korban Pesach, but we read about the Korban Todah in Parshas Tzav. So okay, so that's a possible connection. Question number two: it's often easy to pass judgment on others, including fellow Jews. What guidance does the Rebbe offer for cultivating and strengthening Ahavas Yisrael in a practical and enduring way? I mean, the truth is, just look more closely, meaning the Jewish people are great. Ezu chacham alamin mikol adam. Find the good things about other people. Look for good in other people. You will find it. Meaning, if you're just looking for problems, which is what a lot of us tend to do, then you'll find that too. But if you're looking for goodness, you're looking for what to learn from. This person maybe talks too much during davening, but they always have a Dvar Torah at the ready, and they're always excited about something and learning. This person maybe doesn't learn any Torah, but they'll drop everything in order to do chesed with other people. Look for the good. Look at this person, maybe doesn't do chesed, but he never gets angry at anybody. There's always so much to learn from other people. Look, the Jewish people are great. An additional suggestion is to just start giving. Start giving to people. You know, Rav Dessler famously says, have when you give, you love, and you find that all the time. The more you invest in something, the more connected you are to that thing, and the more protective you are of that thing. So when you give to the Jewish people, when you're constantly giving to people who maybe would otherwise be annoying to you or difficult for you, you'll find that that you'll begin to love them. And it's so, so important to love the Jewish people. I mean, I see it from the question that the person who's asking this question realizes this, and that's why they want to work on it. In order to have your own tefillos answered, Magen Avraham quotes from the Arizal that you give tzedakah right before tefillah, and it's the best skula to have your tefillah answered, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to see that there's v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha before you get up and daven. In fact, in the Haggadah, I was doing this year in the Siach Yitzchak Haggadah, he says that's what Halach Ma'anya is. Halach Ma'anya is a tefillah. And why are we offering a tefillah right now? Because when you want to associate a mitzvah with something, you daven for it. Meaning, when you want, and what do we say? We say, we want our tefillah to be meaningful, so we have to invite other Jews. We have to, I mean, that's how tefillah gets listened to, when you incorporate tzedakah into the tefillah. And it's also true that believing in Klal Yisrael and believing in the inherent goodness of Klal Yisrael and the potential of Klal Yisrael, Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, might be an ikar ha'amuna, because the halacha is that we have to believe in the coming of Mashiach, and yet the Rambam paskins that Mashiach is only going to come when Klal Yisrael does tshuva. So we have to believe that Klal Yisrael is going to do tshuva. Otherwise, it's apikorsis. Otherwise, you're not believing in Mashiach. So not believing in Klal Yisrael is like not believing in Mashiach. It's not believing in one of the Ikarei HaEmuna. So these are a few etzes. I'm sure there are many, many more. Shaila number three: how should one approach the decision to adopt particular chumras or kulas? Is it halachically or hashkafically problematic to deviate from established family minhagim or mesorah? So first of all, you have to have a sense of timing, meaning in times of danger, so then certainly it's appropriate to take upon yourself a chumrah. In times of great hakaras hatov, it's appropriate to take upon yourself a chumrah, meaning if you feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu just did something extraordinary for you, so it makes sense. Rabbi Reisman often tells the story, or I've heard him tell the story, that he noticed at some point that his father was wearing Rabbeinu Tam tefillin after davening. So he said to his father, "When did you start putting on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin?" And it was shortly after Rabbi Reisman had gotten married. And he said, "I started when I married off a son. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did me this great chesed that I was able to marry off a son." Now, mind you, this was a man who lost everything in the Holocaust and who lost another son. Rabbi Reisman lost a brother at a very young age, and his father just overwhelmed with hakaras hatov that he got to marry off his son, and as such, so he takes on a chumrah. Rabbi Reisman's son, Ravelli Reisman, told me that his father started putting on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin when he got married. Meaning, when you have something really good that happens, then it makes sense to try to go out of your way to do something special, to do something great. Or if you feel that there's a time of sakana and you need an extra zechus, in general, when a person is a growing person, it's a good idea to take on extra hakpados as you grow at a reasonable rate and appropriate for where you are in life, but to try to be makbid on certain things. That's another thing Rabbi Reisman says, that sometimes he gets shiduchim calls and people say, "Is he a growing boy?" So he'll say, "Oh, you mean does he take on chumras?" And they say, "No, we don't don't want chumras. We don't like chumras. He said, well, what do you mean by a growing boy then? Meaning a growing boy means someone who's willing to take on new hakpados and new chumras. Now, obviously, to take on new kulas, you need to be much, 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 much more careful about that. Now, when it comes to minhagim, if there are family minhagim that you have, I think it makes sense to keep to those minhagim unless they seem extremely weird and or halachically problematic. But most minhagim that are somewhat prevalent within families have good reasons for it, and it's worthwhile investigating those reasons. Rav Shechter used to tell us, Rav Soloveitchik spent so much time in Shir just explaining every minhag Yisrael, explaining where the minhag came from. He was so connected to minhagim. When Talmidim would ask him, would express interest in keeping Rav Soloveitchik's minhagim, he would say, no, you have your family minhagim. You're supposed to keep the minhagim of your family. Question number four, can you clarify the issue known as Tarti Desastri on Shabbos, where one davens mincha after plaga mincha, but marav before shkia? Is it acceptable to participate in such a minyan, even b'diavet? Okay, so here's the thing. There is a machlokas tonight in Brachos Dav Chav Zayin, what the earliest possible time to daven marav and the latest possible time to daven mincha is. Shitas Rabbi Yehuda is that you have the plaga mincha is the line, which is an hour and a quarter of Shos Manios before shkia, so you could daven marav only after plaga mincha. The Rabbanan, however, hold that shkia is the line, so you can only daven marav after shkia. So the Gemara says, David kamaravid, David kamaravid. You could choose whichever shita you want to follow, and that's fine, because we don't come to a clear conclusion one way or the other. Now, the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Reish Lamed Gimel points out that unless you have a shasat chak, if you live in a community that they always daven mincha before plag, then really you should never ever daven mincha after plag. And if you live in a community where they always daven mincha after plag, like most of our communities, where we daven up until shkia, you should be careful never to daven mariv before shkia. So generally speaking, most of our communities, we choose shkia as the line, and you shouldn't really mess around with that. And the Mishnah Berurah says that even in a shasat chak, you shouldn't daven mincha after plag and mariv before shkia on the same day. That even in a shasat chak, you know, that's because, you know, you're allowed to choose to follow either Shitas Rabbi Yehuda or Shitas Rabbanan on any given day, b'shasat chak, but you can't follow the kulas of both of them on the same day. That's the concept of Tarti Desasri. Meaning, if I'm saying that I'm in a daven mincha after plag, I'm firmly planting myself in the camp of the Rabbanan. But if I'm then willing to daven mariv before shkia, I'm planting myself in the camp of Rabbi Yehuda. How could I do that on the same day? So based on that, it would seem that, you know, the classic 7 o'clock, early Shabbos that people have in their communities during the summertime is a real problem. I mean, if you had to pick a time that is most halachically problematic, that for the large majority of the summer when people do it would mamish fall right between plag and shkia, that would be the time. It's literally the worst halachic time they could have chosen. Why it is that someone decided on 7 o'clock as being the ideal time, you know, at some point, probably 50 years ago in America, I have no idea. I mean, if they would have chosen 6:30, they would have saved themselves so much trouble. If they would have chosen 7:30, they would have saved themselves. But okay, it is what it is. So that is the problem. So Mishnah Berurah is machmir in this, but he does quote the Shita of the Nesivos that if a community has a minhag like this, then you're allowed to daven with them. It doesn't seem to be any real clear, obvious logic as to why that's the case, as to why you're allowed to daven with them, but there is such a Shita of the Nesivos. Aruch HaShulchan says that maybe even the Rabbanan, who say that you could daven mincha until shkia, would allow you to daven marav before shkia also, because he suggests that mariv really corresponds to the hektu chalav meivarim, which happened all night in the Beis Hamikdash. So just as that sometimes that began before nightfall, so mariv could also happen before nightfall. They also quote from the Rav Itzel of Petterberger in the Sefer Pri Yitzchak. He had his own zman and problems. He lived in St. Petersburg in the summertime. It never gets dark outside. So, but Rav Itzel of Petterberger was one of the leading talmidim of Rav Yisrael Salanter. I think that's who said sent him to St. Petersburg, Russia, right? His last name wasn't Petterburger, that he was called Rav Itzel Petterburger because he lived in St. Petersburg. So anyway, in his pre-Yitzchak, he says that there is no Zman for Mariv. The time for Mariv is defined by the time that you're not allowed to daven Shacharis and Mincha anymore. So on a normal day, when you're allowed to daven Mincha until Shkia, so Shkia is the time for Mariv because that's when you can't daven Mincha anymore. But he says very sharply, on Friday night, as soon as you're Mekabel Shabbos, you can't have Mincha anymore. So once you're Mekabel Shabbos, even if it's before Shkia, you can't have Mincha anymore. So if you can't have Mincha anymore, that becomes this man for Mariv. Having said all those justifications, the best thing to do is to avoid it. Rav Schachter, if I'm not mistaken, holds that better to daven one of them be Yechidus, either Mincha or Mariv be Yechidus, than to daven the Tarti Disasri. So, which again also relates to how what you hold about davening B'tzibur. Is davening B'tzibur a Chiyuv, or is davening B'tzibur what Rav Schachter calls the icing on the cake? Assuming it's the icing on the cake, like the Emek Bracha holds, that it's a very, very, very big Milan Tefillah, but it's not a requirement. Rav Moshe holds it's a requirement. So assuming that it's the icing on the cake, we're more willing to sacrifice Tefillah B'tzibur for the sake of the Zmanim, of getting the Zmanim right. So obviously the ideal would be if you find an earlier Mincha Binyan on Friday afternoon. That would be the best. Even if you davened at an earlier Mincha Binyan, if you're going to 7 o'clock to 7 o'clock Shabbos, you're at your parents or in-laws or whatever, and that's the Minyan in town. I think Rav Schachter has told us it's not a good look for a yeshiva boy to walk in to shul after they finish mincha. It makes it look like you came late and that you don't, and you know, it's not a great look to be coming late to davening. So you go and you open up your siddur and you say Tehillim, you make it look like you're davening mincha when they daven mincha. Okay, question number 5. This year, Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos. How should one properly dispose of their chametz given the halachic limitations on burning and handling chametz on Shabbos? So there is a shita in Tanaim that ain't biur chametz al shreifa, that the only way to destroy chametz is burning chametz, but we don't pass in that way. So we pass in Eshbasasa b'chal davar, and therefore you could destroy chametz by, fire b'zara l'ruach, you could crumble it up and throw it into the wind, you can flush it down the toilet, you can pour bleach all over it, whatever it is, whatever is going to destroy that chametz. Now, it is important for a person to realize, though, that if your chametz was excluded from your mechira, now a lot of people will just say, oh, if I have extra challah rolls, I'll just stick it with the chametz that I sold to the guy. So I'll put it behind, the cabinet, the sealed cabinet, whatever, and then with all the rest of the chametz that was sold to a guy. It's important to realize a lot of the mechira's chametz that's done, including the one we do with Rabbi Willig, excludes whatever you leave out from the meals from the mechira's chametz. So you cannot just put it together with the chametz that you sold because you didn't sell it. You specifically didn't sell it so that you'd be able to eat it on Shabbos. Now, there are mechiros that do sell it. How can I eat it on Shabbos if I sold it? So Rav Asher Weiss says that you could sell it and then ask the Nachri for permission to have just a little bit of challah. I'm selling you thousands of dollars worth of chametz. Would you mind if I just ate a little bit of the challah? And a lot of times the Nachri will give permission for that. But many people have no idea how their mechira works because they're not the rabbi and they're not the one that interfaces with the Nachri. So it's certainly best to destroy the whatever chametz you have left over. Even better than that is not to have chametz left over. Cheshbon it out in advance. Like in my house, what we're going to do is we're going to cheshbon out exactly how many people we have. We're going to have half as many challah rolls as people, and everyone's going to eat a half a challah roll. And you got to finish it, you know. There's no excuses. The other possibility is just not to have any chametz and to use egg matzahs for all your Suda Shabbos. I think that's what Rav Schachter said he's going to do. Egg matzahs with grape juice in it, because then it's matzah shira, and you're allowed to eat that on Erev Pesach. I know locally here, they have, I live in the Five Towns, they're going to have a garbage, they sent out an email that they're going to have a garbage truck in Cedarhurst Park where people could bring their extra chametz and throw it into the garbage truck. I don't know how excited I am about that. but you know, in terms of Zilzal Shabbos, in terms of Mukta, in terms of I don't know, it just doesn't strike me as a really great idea. In terms of Mir Lanachri, they're driving this garbage truck to Cedars Park just for the Jewish people. I don't know, the whole thing seems a little bit strange. Okay, question number six. May one use cologne or perfume on Pesach that contains alcohol? Does the nature of the alcohol, denatured versus consumable, or the location of manufacturing affect its permissibility? So this seems like a very educated question, meaning by the person asking, you know, they say, Shelas Chacham Chatzi Tshuva. So whoever's asking the question is aware what the answer is to some degree, that there's a difference between different types of alcohol and the location of the manufacturing, meaning denatured alcohol is alcohol that is mixed together with other stuff that makes it inedible. So it's a machlokas whether that's kosher on Pesach or not, if it's a grain alcohol. So a lot of the kosherist organizations are machmir about that. But they point out that if it's manufactured in the United States, it probably is not really a grain alcohol. It's probably a kitneous alcohol. So when you're dealing with a suffix, you know, where the high likelihood, if it's manufactured in the United States, is that it's only kitneys to begin with. And even if it's really chametz, it's not really Roy Lachilas Kelef, in which case it's not a problem of chametz. So then, you know, there's ample room to be makil. So some of the kosher organizations say, yeah, but you don't know for sure. And if it's not manufactured in the United States, so maybe it actually is a grain alcohol, and therefore they like to be machmir in this. I think Rav Shach is totally makil, meaning even if it is a grain alcohol, anything that's not Roy Lachilas Kelef is not a problem of chametz. Ah, you can argue that if you only went into a lab and knew what you were doing, you could easily make it something that's edible and turn it into something that would be usable. I think there was a high-profile case of a certain presidential candidate's wife who was an alcoholic, and she ended up in the hospital drinking bottles of perfume because she couldn't get her hands on any other alcohol. So an amateur chemist could know how to fix it, so that's what they suggest, that maybe that's called Roy L'Achila. But Basharusham, it's not really Roy L'Achila. So Mikra Adin, it's not really a problem. Again, people have all sorts of chumras for Pesach, which is a nice thing to have all sorts of chumras for Pesach, but it's important to recognize that it's a chumra. Okay, question number seven. If a person suffers from digestive issues and cannot tolerate either wine or grape juice due to acidity, what are the halachically acceptable alternatives for fulfilling the mitzvah of four cups? So where this question seems to be heading is whether you could use light grape juice. Light grape juice is an interesting thing. It's they sell it, you know, kedem regular grape juice and kedem grape juice light. Now the idea of light grape juice is that they take special grapes that have a very strong flavor and the juice has a very intense taste, and then they could water it down more without it losing any of its taste, or as much of its taste. So it's much less sugary than regular grape juice, and that's helpful for a lot of people. I think the Rav Belsky, Zichron Levracha, allowed using that for Kiddush. If I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Reisman does not like the idea of using it for Kiddush. I think Rav Shachter absolutely does not like the idea of using it for Kiddush. But with Dalet Kosos, you're kind of stuck, meaning you don't have to get sick for Dalet Kosos. You don't have to get so sick, at least the Gemara says. One of the Amoraim had headaches for till Shavuos because of Dalet Kosos. But generally speaking, you don't have to get so sick for a mitzvah. You're kind of stuck because while there's a concept of Chamar Medina when it comes to the mitzvah of Kiddush and other brachos ala kos like Havdalah, there's not really Chamar Medina when it comes to Dalet Kosos. Meaning, that's a famous Briska Rav, right? The Briska Rav said that there is that Shitas Atosos is that Dalet Kosos is just like any other brach ala kos like Kiddush, where the balabayas could be motzi everybody, and in which case, as long as the person leading the Seder has a kos of Yayin, you're good to go. You don't need anything else. You don't need to drink anything on your own. But we assume, like Shita Sarambam, that everybody needs to drink Dalet Kosos Derecheros. And Derecheros means not Chamar Medina. Derecheros means that you're actually drinking wine for Dalit Kosos, and that you got to have your own, that you can't be Yotze with Shamei Kona. In fact, they say, Rav Shechter points out, that the Briska Rav's chiddush about that was developed when the Maisa Shahaya happened, where the Jews had to flee from Brisk during World War I. It was dangerous, and Rav Elvel Soloveitchik, the Briska Rav, ended up spending Pesach by his brother Rav Moshe Soloveitchik in Choslovich. And when they were there, there wasn't nearly enough wine for all the Jews of the city to have four kosos. But in each Seder, many of the people started, at least one person would be able to have four kosos. So they said, okay, we'll rely on Shitas HaTosfos, that it's just like a bracha l'kos, and the person leading the Seder will have four kosos. What about everybody else at the table? Should they at least have Chamar Medina? So when they realized this Chiddush, that the Rambam Shita is that that you need four kosos derech Heirus, so you're not Yotze anything with Chamar Medina. According to Tosfos, it's like Kiddush. You could be Yotze with Chamar Medina. Yeah, but according to Tosfos, you could be Yotze with the Balabayas. You don't need your own kos. So they thought there was no benefit in having everybody else have Chamar Medina. Okay, question 8. What is Rabbi Leibowitz's opinion on listening to a cappella music during Svira? Let me preface this by saying that I don't listen to music much anyway. I'm not like a big music guy. So, you know, even though I do hold it's mutter, I don't do it just because it's not such a big sacrifice for me, you know, to kedai heim talmid Rabbi Akiva, you know, that that it's okay for me to go a few weeks without listening to music, other than when I go to weddings where music's not so enjoyable anyway because it's so loud and I'm just going deaf from it. But there's a fascinating discussion in Halacha about recorded music. You know, the question is whether recorded music in general has a status of music bichlal. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva in Chilkav Samkuf Samachvav, where he says, well, you know, recorded voices like listening to somebody sing, and recorded instruments are like, you know, attending a concert of music. So recorded voices mutter, and recorded instruments are aser. However, there's a fascinating tshuva in the Yaz Nidbur of Binyamin Zilber, who's a Talmud of the Chazon Ish. He says, you know, he's not sure about this, but he says that maybe a recorded voice has a din of listening to an instrument because it's coming out of, you know, your phone or your, you know, player or whatever kli it is that's producing the sound. So maybe that has a din of an instrument, and maybe that would be aser. Then, of course, there's those who are more makel. The Chalkas Yaakov thinks that that recorded music maybe is not a problem at all. So I think most of the poskim assume that listening to recorded voices is okay, and a cappella is really just recorded voices. Rabbi Yamin Zilber thinks recorded voices are a problem during Svira. Okay, so there are different shitos in the poskim. Rav Shachter has pointed out that in Yom HaAtzmaut, if a person is not going to be able to feel the celebration of the day without listening to music, then you could listen to music in Yom HaAtzmaut if you're able to feel the celebration of the day and and appreciate the great miracle of the Medina and of having the Medina, and you can get into the joy of the day without music. Then you should do it without music. Question number 9: if someone jointly rents a house and performs bedikas chametz without a bracha before leaving a week prior to Pesach, but he knows that their housemates will subsequently bring and eat chametz in those cleaned areas, I guess he has roommates that aren't so from, especially if they're unsure about their housemates' cleaning practices, has the person fulfilled their halachic obligation? Is additional action required to avoid issues of ownership or responsibility? I don't know. If you did mechira and bittul and you don't come back into the house during Pesach, you're probably covered. Meaning chaser shel adam could be konalo, but not against your will. And you certainly have no will to acquire that that chametz. So I don't think the fact that your roommates are violating averos means that you're in violation of Bali Rabbi Yimatze in any which way. Now, when you come back into the house after Pesach and you open up a cabinet and there's a box of cookies there and it was bought by a Jew into the house on Pesach, so it's Chomet Shavu Lov Pesach, so you're not allowed to benefit from any of that. So a person needs to be careful about that. And finally, question number 10. If someone is leaving home on Friday morning and will be spending all of Pesach at a hotel, or they're leaving Friday morning, which means after the Zman Bedikah, they're going to be at a hotel, what's the correct procedure for Bedikas Chametz at home on Thursday night and upon arrival at the hotel? Okay, now this is something that a lot of people miss the boat on, and that is that many of the halachos in Hilchos Pesach work with the assumption that there's no such thing as mechiras chametz. Like, for example, if you open up Shulchan Aruch, it says if you find chametz on Pesach on the Chol HaMoed, you should burn it. Now that we have mechiras chametz, it's probably usher to burn it because it doesn't belong to you; it belongs to a guy. So you probably have to put it together with the guy's stuff unless you got special permission from the guy to burn whatever chametz is not in the right place, which in Rabbi Wilg's Mechira, we always ask the guy for permission to do that because we know what people are going to do. But technically, you're not really allowed to burn it. It's just that in the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara, they assume that there's no Mechiras chametz that's happening. So this is a good example of that, meaning the halacha is if you leave your house within 30 days of Pesach, the night before you leave, you're supposed to do Bedikas Chametz in order to find and destroy all of your Chametz. But if you're going to be selling all of that Chametz, so what are you finding and destroying? You're selling all of it anyway. So once we have a Mechiras Chametz, the only reason to do Bedika is to make sure that there's no Chametz in any area that you might have access to over Pesach. And is not clearly marked off as belonging to somebody else. It's not in a clearly marked or taped off area in your house. But if you're going to leave your house or your apartment for the entire Yontif and you're selling everything in there, I don't see why you need to do Bedikas Chametz. Now, I should add, Rav Schechter often points out, a lot of times people think they're leaving for the whole Pesach, but then something happens. Every year there's a story where a program closes down or, there's some sort of fight or whatever, and everyone has to get out of there. The hotel burns down, Rachmanis, whatever it is, the food was never delivered, I don't know, whatever it is, and people have to, or someone, Rachmanis, dies over Pesach and you have to return in the middle of Yontif, and people do need to go back to their houses. Well, if that's the case, then you got to do Bedikas Chametz before you leave. So you have to know your situation. If you're in a situation where you live in, you live in an apartment in Washington Heights, and there's no chance you're coming back to that apartment at all over Pesach, meaning even you can be in Israel for Pesach, and even if you had to return on some emergency, you'd go to your parents' house. You wouldn't go to your apartment. So then you probably do not need to do Bedikas Chametz at all in your apartment, even if you're there Thursday night, because what are you looking for? You're looking for things that you're sold to the guy that anyway is going to belong to the guy. So it doesn't seem that you would need to do Bedika on Thursday night. When you get to the hotel Friday morning, you do Bedika, because that's where you're going to be. And they don't, unless someone else did Bedika for you the night before in that room, which is possible that someone did if you have other family members that were there. But if no one did Bedika there, the hotel cleaning crew doesn't do Bedikas Chametz. They just clean up to make the room neat. So you need to do Bedikas Chametz when you get there, without a bracha, because it's during the daytime, but you would do a Bedika when you get there. Okay, thank you everyone for sending in the questions, and for those who listened this far, for listening. Wishing everyone a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, and Bez Hashem will continue after Pesach.
Rose is your name, but when you poop, it sure don't smell like roses. You're number two, burns the hair in my nose. But we fought hand in paw, now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear, I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.